The 15th Tribeca Film Festival that concluded this past weekend has done something a number of film festivals have done that is not in the catalog, but in the atmosphere, like Cannes or Sundance or even Toronto. Besides being about a love of film, Tribeca was conceived as an engine to bring its location to life. In this case, conceived in the aftermath of 9/11 and debuting in 2002, Tribeca is part of the miracle of the rebirth of Lower Manhattan. Our film critic, Harlan Jacobson, was there.
Some of the screenings I went to were in a Regal multiplex on Vesey Street, in a part of Manhattan that's a brand new city. It's as if somebody dropped Minneapolis onto some landfill in the Hudson overnight. Who knew it was there? Tribeca, at its heart, has been as much about rebuilding New York City as it has been about bringing some first-rate films to the area screens. When I pull the New York Times out of its blue plastic bag each morning, yes, I still like reading news print. I check out who won't be reading the paper anymore on the obituary page. As such, I've become something of a groupie of the paper's obituary writers. The obits is where historically writers for the New York Times who fell out of favor were sent to die, sort of like the former Soviet Union, also known for never firing, just exiling to Siberia. Not anymore, I learned from Vanessa Gould's measured documentary, Obit. They're stylists and historians now on a deadline, 800 words by 6 p.m. And while the film faints towards being about fascinating obits that have come their way, it then moves into being a nuts and bolts doc about the writers in the department formerly from hell. Thanks to Gould, they're all here. Such departmental stars as Bill Grimes, who frets about the task he outlines for us. You're trying to write a story, not a resume. The workhorse Bruce Weber, who I learned by seeing him peck away at his computer, is a three-fingered righty. Marguerite Fox, my personal fave, who trained as a cellist and looks it, and whom I once called and congratulated on an obit that was a chamber piece of restrained humor. And John Pirelli's, the music critic, who parachutes in like a ghostbuster to do Michael Jackson in 3 hours, or as he did 2 weeks ago, 3,000 words on Prince for two columns above the fold on the front page the next morning, made me wonder, what are Dylan or Paul McCartney going to get, virtual reality holograms? There's a trip to the morgue, not the city one, but the quaint pre-digital file room in the bowels of the new building where past clippings, info, and some 1,700 advance obits are kept on the future dead, some bylines by Times writers who are now dead themselves. A good death is at 9 a.m., Bill Grimes says. An unfortunate one is in the late afternoon, coming, or rather going, right up against that hard 6 o'clocker. Miss it, and you die for all eternity, twice the same day. Oh, and being a devoted subscriber doesn't get you in. They don't cancel your subscription either. You got to do that yourself. Speaking of the ungrateful dead, Liza Johnson's Elvis and Nixon, which used Tribeca to bounce into New York area theaters, is like a Saturday Night Live sketch that begins in backstory around Christmas 1970, when Elvis decides he wants to get an FBI badge as a federal agent at large and will go meet Nixon in the White House to get it. Shannon is cool and slippery as the king, doing the most outrageous things, usually involving guns, and getting away with it, and always gaining access wherever he wants to go. It's tempting to say that this is the meeting of two kings, since Elvis behaved like one, and Nixon was confused about whether he was one. But in the frequently amusing script by Cary Elwes and Joey and Hanalei Sahgal, that meeting, when it finally does take place in the Oval Office, is like watching two crazy caged zoo animals, a panther and a panda, brought together to mate. They do. Michael Shannon slips right into Elvis's insanity, and Kevin Spacey marries his fabled impersonation skills to a great actor's empathy to show us the little man's insecurities inside Nixon.
From 12:05 to 1:05, you have your open hour, at the end of which we thought would be a good time to have your meeting with Mr. Presley. From 1:10 to 1:30, you have an informal meet and greet with 150 or so White House volunteers in the state dining
room. Elvis Presley.
Yes, sir. The entertainer.
Oh, I know who Elvis Presley is, yes. Who the f*** set this up?
It turns out the photograph that is most requested from the National Film Archives is not that one of the sailor kissing the girl in Times Square at the end of World War II. It's of Elvis and Nixon in the Oval Office. You can see Elvis and Nixon in theaters now. But maybe your best bet this weekend is Viva, the Cuban Oscar nominee that showed at Sundance. It's set in a Havana gender-bending showgirl bar about the pretty boy in the dressing room who wants to be a showgirl superstar, much to the consternation of his old-school papa who shows up mysteriously from the past on debut night. Viva is an update of sorts on Strawberries and Chocolate and the gender revolution that's coming to post-revolutionary Cuba like everywhere else. In fact, Viva was written and filmed in Havana by an Irishman, Paddy Breathnach, with Irish Film Board money. Go figure. That makes it a good yarn spun in a hot place. Wear your heels and go. And I'm Harlan Jacobson.